Before we get to today's podcast, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, DC and Helwani. Are you a fan of mixed martial arts? DC and Helwani is the top podcast in the sport with exclusive interviews from the top fighters and the very best pre- and post-fight analysis. Keep an eye out for their show streaming on Twitter Mondays and Wednesdays or catch the podcast, which gets posted after they wrap up. Download and subscribe to DC and Helwani in the right time wherever you get your podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time. Hey, look at those. I almost call them the New Jersey Nets because I'm old, but you know what I mean. We'll also talk about the ridiculous coaching hiring cycle in the NFL and a look at the Martin Luther King Day holiday. But first, all right, man. We got through the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and I got to say, as I look at it, this appears to have gone in a way that would be probably best case scenario for the NFL in terms of a Final Four. There is not a single Super Bowl matchup that they will not be able to sell the hell out of on the basis of some sort of narratives. Now, it's important to note that the Super Bowl is not like the NBA Finals, which is so completely dependent on matchups in the World Series, like whether people watch it and everything depends on who is going to be in it. We'll watch anybody playing the damn Super Bowl. Like, I imagine that there'd be some bigger numbers with some bigger matchups, but by and large, we'll watch just about anybody playing that bad boy. But think about this. On the AFC side, we got the Chiefs and the Bills. So we're looking at Patrick Mahomes and the great Josh Allen. On the other side, we got Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, keeping in mind this has never happened in the playoffs. Like, that's one of those things you don't quite think about because the dudes are in different conferences. They've been playing forever, but you've never had Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers facing off in the playoffs before. It's also in part because Aaron Rodgers hadn't been back to the Super Bowl since 2010, but you understand what I'm saying here. They've got cash money stuff for what they want. They got the old guard over here. They got the new guard over here. If you wind up with Mahomes and Rodgers in the Super Bowl, you got the two best quarterbacks in the league this season. If you wind up with Mahomes and Brady in the Super Bowl, you got new GOAT versus old GOAT. If you wind up with Josh Allen, it don't matter which one is on the other side. People just going to be so damn happy they'll be able to pitch in and everything will be fantastic on that for them, man. The Josh Allen thing really gets the people going. It gets them charged up. They really enjoy that sort of thing. Like, this is what the NFL has got. And look, I think that this is important, that if nothing else, they're going to make sure they get a young quarterback in there. Because, Gabe, something you and I have talked about on this show before is the huge gap between, like, 2010 and 2018 in terms of quarterbacks being produced by the league. There was a bit of a dead period there where they didn't have those guys. That's in part why we wind up with all these old timers still out here, still cracking, because there was just a hole in place when it came to talking about quarterback production. Nope. You got it now, right? Like, the AFC, we had three quarterbacks in the division round in the AFC who were drafted in 2018. And one that was drafted in 2017. Like, that's what you had. The next generation of quarterbacks was right there on full display. And I believe the NFL needs it. If nothing else, the NFL needs that. Because otherwise, it's just going to be like, yo, what happened? As we saw, you just can't keep rolling them old dudes out there forever. That Drew Brees, Tom Brady game, he looked old. Tom Brady looked old, and Michael Thomas, woo! See what they was calling him on the internet?
What was that?
Slant boy. So the thing with Michael Thomas is, Michael Thomas talk a whole lot of smack, right? Which is obviously his right, and he's a very good wide receiver. But he talk a whole lot of smack, and both DBs and receivers ain't really trying to hear it because they basically feel like all this dude comes out here and does is run slants and hitches. That's it. He's out there with Drew Brees. Drew Brees getting a little bit old. Drew Brees can't throw the ball down the field anymore. So it was perfect for Michael Thomas. He's going to catch 150 passes because Drew Brees cannot throw the ball far enough to get the ball to anybody else, right? As you may have seen in that game, they had to call Jameis Winston in there when it was time to throw the ball very far because Drew Brees is simply not able anymore to throw the ball very far, right? Like, that's where we are. So Michael Thomas, who, by the way, I just don't know why we don't talk about this enough. Does he have the worst haircut in the NFL? Yeah, give that a look, Gabe. His haircut is just consistently awful. I don't even know what the plan is necessarily. Like, I don't know. It's just, yeah. So he has a bad haircut. He talks a whole lot of smack, and you know he does run a lot of shorter routes. Gabe, you seeing that haircut?
It's like a Shaggy Gumby kind of.
Yeah, I think. Like, I don't even know like what he says when he goes in there. Assuming he goes in somewhere, like maybe he's just about that quarantine life, and so he's doing it himself, and this is the best he can come up with. I don't know what to call this. I have no basis of comparison except for, like, I think Red Fox used to have this in, like, 1958, and I don't mean that in no good way. But Drew Brees, you know, the Saints must really love him, right? And the reason I say that is, let's be honest here. The Saints had a team that was capable of winning a Super Bowl. The problem was the quarterback. The ceiling on this team was the quarterback. And we have watched as these years have gone by, and maybe it's just a matter of the Saints, because they were so close year after year after year, that what we had was really just a matter of them overestimating whether they could account for Drew Brees' decline, right? Because in 2017, it was the play in Minnesota, right? That's what took him down. In 2018, the most glorious blown pass interference call of all time. God, I love that. Last year, they got to overtime against the Vikings, and then they lost that one. All right, but all of those were very, very close. And so I think that maybe they believed, okay, we've had this close enough. Mill, we can just get a little bit out of Drew, right? A little bit more out of Drew. And I think they feel an obligation to let Drew Brees play as long as he wants. He means that much to that team. He means that much to that city. Nobody wants to be the one to tell Drew Brees that he's not going to be able to play anymore. That's it, right? And so they made the call that we're going to ride this out as far as we can, and they will try to account for what the limitations are that Brees has at this point and try to win a Super Bowl. Now, Brees was better this year than Peyton Manning was in 2015. Like, in 2015, you remember 2015 Peyton Manning before they had to put him on ice to hope he'd be okay for the Super Bowl. Them balls was wobbling. It was all like, I think Peyton Manning played in something like 10 regular season games but led the league in interceptions. Like, it was all bad, right? But they had one of the greatest defenses of all time. Like, not just a really good defense, not just the best defense in the league that year. They had one of the best defenses of all time. And so since they had one of the best defenses of all time, they made it work, right? I feel like that's what the Saints were kind of hoping for in some form or fashion with Drew Brees, just to keep it going. And then they wind up getting in this game against the other old man, and their old man threw three interceptions. That was it. But the truth is, just about any other time and situation, if a football player was in the midst of a decline in the way that Drew Brees was, and one that could ultimately cap the ceiling of a team, they would have got somebody else in there. At the very least, they would have taken a quarterback in the first round somewhere along the way. I mean, hell, the Packers just did it to Aaron Rodgers, right? Somebody would have got in there and had like the future already planned for, except if you're going to keep rocking Drew Brees, then you needed to get more stuff around Drew Brees. You couldn't just go make the decision that we were going to go get another quarterback. Nah, if Drew Brees is going to be your guy, you needed receivers, you needed more defenders, like so forth and so on. Those were the things that you were going to need if that's what it was going to be. And so they did all that other stuff. And now, Gabe, what the hell are they going to do?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like they kind of tried to do that QB in waiting, the future in waiting type of thing with Taysom Hill, with Jameis, also too with Teddy Bridgewater, but a bunch of quarterbacks that weren't necessarily like fresh where you could try to explain away that they were redshirting.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think with Teddy Bridgewater, they got a high-end backup, right? And that, by the way, came in very handy because Drew Brees was out for 5 weeks and Teddy came in and did it. The Taysom Hill thing is interesting because I just can't believe that Sean Payton really looks at Taysom Hill and really thinks to himself, like, this is going to be the guy. He can't. There's just no way possible. I don't know what they think of Jameis, though. Like, I'm very curious. They've had Jameis there for a year. You know, is Jameis one of those dudes that might have just needed a hard reset before he got back out there and figured it out? Because as much as we want to, you know, we can or we would like to just kind of dispose of Jameis and just throw it out the window, Ryan Tannehill's been like a top seven quarterback for two straight years. You know, like, who's to say, right? What the arc is, the development arc that any of these guys happen to have, I'm not sure. But they had Jameis for like $1 million contract or something like that in a world where Marcus Mariota got $7 million to play for the Raiders. Right, right. But what are they going to do, right? What is their plan ultimately going to be? Because the truth is, I'm sure they're always in cap shambles and they always find a way out of the cap shambles. So I don't know, like, to even care too much about the fact that the Saints might have cap problems. But they got a win now roster. Is there going to be a win now quarterback available? Because I don't see it. Well, hold on. Let's ask ourselves this. Is there any chance that the Saints have a boatload of draft picks? Because you might be able to get Deshaun Watson. Can we just take a moment to discuss the fact that the Houston Texans are going to choose their con man of an executive over Deshaun Watson? Like, this has really happened. And when I say that this Jack Easterby dude is a con man, I've said before, I don't know if I've said it on here, but I've said it in other places, and I think I'm right about this, and you let me know if I'm wrong, all right? The man parlayed being the chaplain into being the most powerful person in a football organization. Anytime your path to the top starts by being the man that prays, that's not what that's supposed to be. I'm saying that if you come in saying that you want to help people save their souls, you shouldn't be able to parlay that into anything that's about personal profit. At least not here. Like, if that doesn't just scream out to you, there's a con man in the house. I don't know what else you need to know. Because there's a con man in the house. Everybody knows there's a con man in the house. Except for the owner. This is what I think is the funniest con that Easterby has run. And Easterby has obviously run a few cons, right? So where this all got him in trouble is they decided to call a search firm to help them find candidates for general manager. Now, Jack Easterby clearly had his guy in mind, this Caserio guy, who worked for the Patriots. Easterby also worked for the Patriots. And they had tried to hire him before, but the Patriots like called it tampering, and then everybody went on about their business. And so they decided they were going to call the search firm. And so if you're Easterby and you've got your guy, but they say they want to call in a search firm, it's probably in your best interest to be like, yeah, go ahead and call the firm. That's cool. That's straight. You know, lay low on it. But then the search firm didn't come back with his guy. That part, I doubt that he expected. Now Easterby got to do something else. Now Easterby's got to play a different game, right? That's when Easterby went and strong arm through and got his guy there, okay? All the stuff they did with the head coach situation, we'll talk more about that a little bit later. I don't know who exactly Easterby wants. Basically, we've had a lot of suggestions of people of color for these jobs. Jack Easterby has been there to swat all of them away. Why exactly? Don't have a great answer. Right. So like the general manager thing, for example, I think he really just wanted his guy Caserio. It happened that the search firm came back with Omar Khan and Louis Riddick. But I can't say that Easterby not wanting them was about those guys not being white as much as Easterby had his guy. And so he wanted to make sure that his guy got on. But the fact that they didn't call the enemy at all. Like, there's just a whole lot of names that seem to be out there that other people were down to call. And the Texans were like, nah, we're good. Why would we do that? Like, who wants any part of that? And now, Deshaun Watson, and by, look, the Texans ain't got to trade him until they get exactly what they want. But he ain't going back. He's not. It just so happens that they could probably get 3 first-round picks for him. Jets, you get 2 first-round picks for Jamal Adams. You telling me you can't get 3, maybe 4 for Deshaun Watson? Because the one thing about the idea of we can get 3 first-round picks from you is, first round pick don't mean the same thing, you know? So like the Saints first round pick is in the late 20s. You'd kind of rather something a little higher up, probably, one would argue, right? Like, that would be the thought. But why not? Like, just about everybody and their mom need to be out there trying to figure out how it is that they can get a hold of Watson.
It's so interesting with Deshaun Watson, too, because he's really at the top of the game right now as one of the best quarterbacks, you would say, right? Coming out of college, what was kind of the thought about Deshaun Watson? Did people really see the ceiling for him? I mean, he was throwing darts at Clemson.
Well, yes. My concern with Watson was arm strength. I do not like quarterbacks who don't have strong arms. He does not have a strong arm. Like, there was a legitimate reason to be skeptical of him as a pro, and you had to like avoid getting caught up in that there's something about him thing, right? Because there obviously is something about him, but that there's something about you only matters if you're good up to a certain point, right? It becomes a marginal sort of thing. And so that was the question, was just like, is he going to be good enough at the other things in order to get you to that place? And yeah, he turned out to be. And this year, look, because I had been saying for the longest, I like Watson, but I didn't love Watson. They got rid of Hopkins. Will Fuller got suspended, and this dude was better than he had ever been this year. He was absolutely a top five quarterback this year with everything crumbling around him. And then they got the nerve to not listen to him on stuff. But anyway, get ready. Everybody's favorite team going to try to get him. It would be cool if the Saints did for the Saints' sake so they could keep up their Super Bowl situation. But since they didn't have another quarterback this year and all they had was Drew Brees, I just want to remind Saints fans, it's okay to wear those paper bags. I understand if you're feeling a little bit ashamed. Ooh, I love to watch them lose.
Whether you're making a delicious family meal or a post-workout snack, choose the Farm Fresh taste of Eggland's Best Eggs. Only Eggland's Best hens are fed their proprietary all-vegetarian feed. That's what makes their eggs more nutritious. With 10 times more vitamin E, 25% less saturated fat, and 6 times more vitamin D compared to ordinary eggs. Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com to learn more.
All right, man. I watched some NBA basketball last night. It was fantastic. It was the Nets and the Bucks. I believe that this was game 2 of the James Harden era with the Brooklyn Nets. And look, was James Harden out here putting towels in his clothes when he was in Houston? It looked like he was out there like Sonny Liston, and he was stuffing towels in his clothes to make himself look bigger. And then like when he finally got to the place that he wanted to go, he was like, fine, cool, I can come out here and I can be myself, right? And they look good. Like, he and Durant playing together, that was always something that I could see happen. Like, that was one that I never questioned whether of that pairing could work. Not because we had seen the pairing work 9 years ago, but because Durant doesn't need to hold the ball that much, even if Harden does, right? Like, Durant, just get it to him, but he doesn't need to hold it that much. I've seen people raise the question as to whether or not it is that James Harden didn't really like taking all the shots that much. It's just that that's what Mike D'Antoni told him to do. And I'm like, okay, so this dude gets to show up whenever he wants. He gets superstars traded in and traded out, but he just taking all the shots because somebody else told him to.
Okay.
Right?
If you say so.
But this is when Kyrie coming back. I think later this week, Kyrie was questionable for the game on Monday night. And I'm like, how are you questionable for a game if you're not even, like, hurt? Like, either you're going to play or you're not. And by the way, none of us have any idea as of now what he was up to. And so now the Kyrie experience comes with these other dudes. And Kyrie and Harden, that's the match that we're all just kind of like, I don't know about this. Even if you can make an argument that James Harden doesn't have to have the ball that much to be James Harden, there is no way for Kyrie Irving to be Kyrie Irving without having the ball a lot.
In those playoff runs with LeBron, did LeBron not have a high percentage of possession down the stretch of games where Kyrie was playing a little bit off ball?
Yeah, there's that, but that stretches. And that's LeBron James. And by the way, Kyrie didn't like that. Look, man, he is the best ball handler that I have ever seen. He is a great shooter. He can be a very, very good passer. There's so many overwhelmingly positive things that we can say about him. So many of them. I just don't know how any of it's going to match up with James Harden. I don't. And so then you get James Harden, who is like passive aggressive in moments of conflict, with Kevin Durant, who is Kevin Durant, with Kyrie Irving, who is Kyrie Irving, with a first-year head coach. I mean, it's a lot going on. But just the basketball? Gabe, have you seen Kevin Durant play this year?
Ooh, gosh. He definitely looks like he's back to his old self, doesn't he?
And it's bananas. Like, I actually think an underrated subtext of this season has been, it appears that the Achilles tendon is not the death sentence that it once was. I mean, just basically, it used to be that if you tore your Achilles, it was a wrap on you as a basketball player. Like, you might still be able to play some basketball every now and then, but the idea, like, I don't know how good anybody thought you were or were not going to be, but it was a wrap on that. Kevin Durant, and maybe it's because Kevin Durant got a full 18-month recovery from the Achilles. There was no rushing or anything else. The idea that he could come back looking basically about the same, if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, that's got to be the best news you've ever heard, right?
It's got to be. I mean, how much of that, in your opinion, do you think, is it related to age? It kind of always seemed like it was something that happened kind of at the very end of someone's career. And then it was like, all right, and that's a wrap. I don't necessarily remember like someone in the prime of their career or super young, which you would, right? Getting an Achilles injury and being like, oh, are they ever going to be the same? And then them not being the same.
Well, I can't think of anybody super young having a torn Achilles.
Well, what's interesting, and this is kind of an aside, so with Chelsea, the soccer club that I follow, we had two young players in their like late teens and early 20s get Achilles injuries within a 3-month span, which was absolutely unheard of. And both of them are playing well now.
Yeah. So like one thing, as I think about basketball players who have had Achilles tears, they've all been late 20s, early 30s. Or like, you know, Kobe Bryant at the absolute end. I've never seen it as or thought of it as a young person's injury. That's just never really been the way that I've seen it. But think about this. Wes Matthews tore his Achilles and then signed like a giant free agent deal after he tore his Achilles. He hasn't been the same player since. Like, if you really go back and look at the numbers for him basically all fell after that. Like, he's been a starter and he stayed in the league, but he was not, I don't think he's been the player that he was before he suffered the torn Achilles. But with Durant, and maybe some of this is just Durant being such a unicorn and just being, I mean, just how does this exist in the state of nature, right? If Durant can look like this, and John Wall has looked pretty good this year, not terribly different than he looked the last time we saw him playing. If you're the Warriors, it's got to make you feel a little better about what might happen when Klay Thompson comes back. Because by the way, how did they beat the Lakers last night? Like, the Lakers were up like 15, 16 points, you know, when I was looking at it, and I was like, okay, cool, I'm out of here. And then I look up in the morning, I'm like, what do you mean the Warriors won? How did that happen? So, like, have the Warriors figured something out? Dude, Draymond Green, as an offensive player, like as a scoring threat, it's over. He's awful in that way. But as a defensive savant, nope, still got it. As a passer, distributor, still got it. His numbers are going to look terrible, right? His contribution, still there. Still there. Did you see the clip they had of him last night talking to James Wiseman? But he says, look, I see you on Marc Gasol. I like that. I like that. And then the camera pans and you realize Marc Gasol is standing right there. Right there. But I got to say, what I found interesting about watching Draymond talk to James Wiseman in that way is that he seems to fully understand what his role is going to be with this team from here until. Like, he's going to have to be big brother type to James Wiseman, because Wiseman is in a situation that you don't see very often, which is a guy who is a top three or four pick, but he winds up like not just on a pretty good team, but a team with Steph Curry and Draymond Green. Like, dudes that are really used to winning. Like, normally a guy like Wiseman, you throw him out there a lot, and he's out there with other young dudes trying to figure out how exactly to get this done. That's not what this is now with him. He's out there on a team that's expecting to win. Like, whether they should or shouldn't expect to win becomes its own discussion. But they expect to win. And so there are only but so many mistakes he's going to get to play through. There will be some, but so many that he's just going to be able to play through. So Draymond Green's going to have to be the guy to be like, look, this is what I'm going to do. This is how it's going to go. And I was really impressed by the way that he did talk to him about it, because it seemed to be so encouraging and just being like, and this is a thing I think that happens for guys when they first get to the NBA, which is James Wiseman doesn't know what it is to be open. You know, like when he's telling me, I gave you the ball right here, I wasn't looking. He's like, yeah, that's my point. You're open. You don't even know that you're open yet. Like in the NBA, this is what open is. Open isn't what it was in high school. That's wide open. Open isn't what it was in college, which is pretty open. Open in the NBA. There we go. It's like that quick. You know, like that move you got to make. It's that quick. And that's what he's going to have to figure out. But if the Warriors turn out to be pretty good, this would be a great story. Like, good for Steph. Like, I've raised the question about whether Steph's a ceiling raiser or a floor raiser. It appears that Draymond Green, if nothing else, has some role somewhere in this. Because they looked terrible before Draymond got back. Terrible. And for Draymond to be a dude that can't shoot anymore, it is amazing that they don't look terrible anymore, largely because they got him.
The two of them together, Draymond the floor raiser, Steph the ceiling raiser.
Could be. Except for the fact that we saw Draymond out there last year without Steph. And let me tell you, the floor was low.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Gabe, I got a trivia question for you. You may not realize the answer to. Do you know how many black head coaches there are in the NFL right now?
How many black head coaches there are in the NFL right now? Two?
All of two black head coaches in the NFL as of right now. Now, remember the summer of George Floyd? Gabe, you remember that? The summer of George Floyd. And I thought that we were really at a point where we were going to be able to make some things change, because people really seem to have had a bit of a come to Jesus moment after what happened to George Floyd. And we saw people talk about all kinds of initiatives. We saw even Wrangler putting out a statement that said Black Lives Matter, all this stuff, right? Everything was supposed to happen. That was in May, right? So we're talking about 8 months ago that happened. Where's it at now? Where is it? Like, where is that spirit? Is it permeating through? Do you feel it's still permeating through stuff? Because I don't feel like it's still permeating through stuff. And if you need some proof that it ain't permeating through stuff, it looks like the NFL, after the summer of George Floyd, is going to go through a hiring cycle and not hire a single black coach. Now, who knows? That might change. But as things stand presently, it looks like that's what it's going to be. And if that ain't pathetic. Jason Reed of The Undefeated wrote a piece about this, and he made the point that the people who are like the coaches and the Fritz Pollard folks and everything else, they all believe that Roger Goodell really cares about this. And I think he does too. They believe that Troy Vincent in the league office cares about this. And I believe that too. But they cannot make the owners give a damn. And what the owners have demonstrated over and over and over again on all matters of race for years and years and years is that they just don't care. They don't, right? They cared about this when they thought it might get them sent to court. And maybe that's what it's going to take. Again, the whole reason we got the Rooney Rule in the first place is Johnny Cochran threatened to take them to court. Like, maybe it's going to take somebody else threatening to take them to court, right? But they just don't care. And the general public and observers just don't care. But let me tell you what they do care about. Now, Gabe, it's funny. You mentioned this before we started recording, where you were unfamiliar with the new hire for the Atlanta Falcons, a gentleman named Arthur Smith. All right, so Arthur Smith played college football at the University of North Carolina, and he has been the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans for the last couple of years. And now he got this job with the Falcons. He is 38 years old. So, a couple days ago, I was doing some Googling on him, and I learned something that I did not realize. His father is Fred Smith, the CEO of FedEx. All right, now, I was on the internet on Saturday, and I was talking about Arthur Smith because he had just gotten the job. And I made the point, I had a typo in it or autocorrect situation, but I made the point, I was like, hey, I think Arthur Smith's done a good job as the offensive coordinator, but I got to say, the jobs that he had before he became coordinator scream out, you know who my dad is? And the parade of angry Caucasians into my mentions for days about me saying this, right? Just furious. He earned that job. He worked his way up from the bottom, right? Again, he's an NFL head coach at 38, which we all acknowledge is pretty quick, all right? But Gabe, this is why I said to man, his resume screamed out, do you know who my dad is, okay? He was a grad assistant at UNC. Then his first job was with the Washington football team. Gabe, what's the name of the stadium that they play in?
Was FedEx Field.
Yes.
They threatened to take away said naming rights if the Washington football team did not shed their mascot. Now they are also remaining as FedEx Field, are they not?
Right. FedEx! Okay. His next job was as a defensive intern slash administrative assistant at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a place where the Student Athlete Academic Support Center, I think that's what it's called anyway, FedEx. That's the name of it, all right? His next gigs were with the Titans as like quality control guy. Like he was defensive quality control guy, then offensive quality control guy. And then he wound up with like these amorphous titles, right? Offensive line slash tight ends assistant. You notice it doesn't say offensive line coach. Just slash like offensive line slash tight ends assistant. And then he became the assistant tight ends coach for 2 years. And then he became the tight ends coach. And then he got 2 years as offensive coordinator. And then he became the Atlanta Falcons head coach. Like, who do y'all think get these quality control jobs? I'm just curious. You know, like, because I can go look this up. Kyle Shanahan, he was once a quality control guy. Sean McVay was a quality control guy. You start looking at a lot of those coaches' kids. They get those quality control jobs. They're the ones, you got to know somebody to get those jobs. And obviously, this guy knew the CEO of FedEx. Now, I'm not mad at him for it. You get in where you fit in. However, I thought I was making a pretty benign statement about the fact that he worked his first two jobs at places with his dad's company's name on buildings.
Yeah, and this isn't exclusive to, like, coaching, too. Who do you think gets, like, a lot of those internships?
Right.
You know, that don't get posted.
Right.
It's like so-and-so's daddy whose name is on the marquee outside.
Yep. And look, it happens, right? But the level of anger that people had at me for saying it, you have this all wrong. He's the hardest working guy in the building. They don't give you things for being the hardest worker in the building. Ain't no prize for that. And I'm like, you're not even, why are you so mad at this? Like, that was what my response to it was, is that even if you disagree with me, why are you so mad at this? Because I guarantee you, not a single one of those people in that long line of angry Caucasians is nearly as upset about the fact that Eric Bieniemy has not received a head coaching job yet. Not a one of them is. Me simply pointing out that it probably helped that Fred Smith was his pops infuriates them more than Bienemy not having his job. And again, you and I have talked about this before. There might be a damn good reason why Eric Bienemy hasn't gotten one of these jobs. I don't know. I'm not in the position to say, right? But I am in a position to say, get the fuck out of here with this idea that Arthur Smith toiled his way from the bottom, put his head down, and worked hard for 10 years. 10? That's all? Are you new here? You think 10 years is a long time to be trying to get an NFL head coaching job? Are you serious? No, man. Bottom line is, for the black coaches, the way they got to feel is that why the rules always got to change. Always got to change. So this Brandon Staley, defensive coordinator for the Rams, who just got the job coaching the Chargers. Young dude. He was a defensive coordinator like with John Carroll a couple of years ago. And he just made this happen. Good for him. He seems to be a very, very good defensive coordinator. I don't have anything bad or critical to say about him as a coach. But what I can say to you, they had told us for the longest that a big part of why it was that black folks couldn't get these head coaching jobs is because there was a preference for offensive coaches, especially for a team that has a quarterback that, you know, has been developing or whatever it is that, no. They're going to want an offensive guy to wind up running that team to go ahead and do that, right? Then you look up out of nowhere and some hotshot defensive guy pops up and gets that job. And you know a big part of why he got that job? Not just because, I mean, I'm sure he was very impressive in all of that. He went to the same college as the general manager for the Chargers. The rules just keep changing, right? Like everything they say you're supposed to be able to do in order to get these jobs or what you have to do, it just always feels like it flips up every time you actually might want to give the job to a black dude. Maybe, just maybe, right? So being Andy Reid's offensive coordinator, it worked for Doug Peterson. It worked for Matt Nagy, okay? All Doug Peterson has done is won a Super Bowl. Matt Nagy's made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years as the coach of the Bears. But that Bienemy, you're not so sure about that one, huh? And what's weird about Bienemy, though, is you would have thought by now that you'd have had some real leaking as to why, some rationale as to why. Hasn't happened. It just happened. But the issue is the league doesn't care. Like, we watch these dudes try to shirk the Rooney Rule in every way they can on so many different levels. These folks just do not ultimately care about this. They do not think that this matters. And so somebody going to have to get 12 and take this thing to trial. Like, I guess maybe that's the only way that they're going to come up, you know, come through this and get some kind of solution. But the other part of it is, like, actual public or whatever. I wish the public cared as much about Eric Bieniemy and his plight as I saw that people cared about Arthur damn Smith getting a job at 38. Because God forbid that I would imply that it helps if your dad's the CEO of FedEx. And they all hit me with the, you're implying he didn't earn his job. I ain't never got a job in my life because I earned it. I got every job I got because they gave it to me. The jobs I didn't get weren't because I didn't earn them. They didn't give them to me, whatever the reason happens to be. But like, you know, this, you say he didn't earn his job. I don't give a damn about that. What are you, 10 years old? I know how the world works. I'm less concerned about whether that man earned his job. And by the way, just because you didn't earn it doesn't mean that you're not good for it. I say often about hiring coaches that if you can, what you really want to find is like a brilliant 35-year-old. Like when you look at the super like high ceiling hires over time, especially in college, it's getting in early on somebody and riding it out for a long time. So if like for the Brandon Staley dude, if he's the young guy that's got it and they figured it out, then it's a great hire if they can make it work. But they don't never see, other than Flores, he's the closest thing to it that I can think of. Flores, Raheem Morris, back when he got a job like 11 years ago. Ain't a whole lot of black dudes getting that job on, hey, man, we see something in him. We see it. It's there. You know, we'll work it out as he, you know, works through the kinks on all these things. Nah. We don't get that luxury. Black dude got to get all the experience in the world in order to get the job. And then once he's got the experience, what happens? Now you're too old. But hey, again, just ask yourself this. If after the summer of George Floyd, you can't make nobody care, what in the hell is it going to take to make something get better?
Finally, sunscreen worthy of your skin. Sol de Janeiro's new Rio Radiance SPF 50 collection, where glowing hydration meets sun protection in a beachy and nostalgic set. Confidently embrace your glow with lightweight 100% mineral SPF body lotion, refreshing SPF body spray, and shimmering SPF body oil. Receive 10% off on your first order on soldejaneiro.com, plus free shipping with the code Spotify10.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, today's If You Haven't Heard difference-making stories are brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car, love your car with the new CarMax Love Your Car Guarantee.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from entertainment.
Hey, it's Rosh Ali with USA Today. So this past Saturday, a video started circulating on Twitter showing Bow Wow performing at a packed Houston nightclub on Friday night. And as you can imagine, most of the people that were there were not wearing masks. They were not social distancing. They were just living their best lives, singing along to Bow Wow. So the video went viral. People were big mad that folks were in a packed nightclub, not abiding by CDC guidelines in the middle of a pandemic that has just killed 2 million people worldwide. People expressed their frustrations with partygoers, Bow Wow. Some people were just like, why would you ever risk your life to go see Bow Wow of all people? But alas, Bow Wow was not the only celebrity that was there. He was actually performing as part of Larry Moreau's All Black Birthday Weekend, which included a lineup of events over the long MLK weekend with celebs like Meek Mill, Trey Songz, Terrence J, Fabulous, all were in Houston. So these events actually caught the attention of Sylvester Turner, the mayor of Houston, who condemned these events and said that him and his team would be watching to see if any of these went over capacity, anything like that, and they were planning on shutting them down if things got out of hand. So Bow Wow ended up tweeting in response saying, "Safe to say the mayor of Houston hates my guts. I can't believe I get the blame for a whole weekend. This is ridiculous." But Sylvester responded back to Bow Wow, and he's like, no, Bow Wow. He doesn't dislike him. It's just that the city is in the midst of a pandemic with nearly 2,000 infected and 17 folks who died the day before. So it's not the time for concerts. We just got to get past this virus, and then, you know, we can live it up after.
Look, man, I understand the argument that it is irresponsible of Bow Wow, of Fabulous, any of these other people to be out here for these events, right? Like I 100% get that. And in Houston, what they got the issue is places that are calling themselves restaurants, but are really nightclubs out here, like throwing these events. I got you. I cannot blame Bow Wow for you going to see Bow Wow. I just can't do it. Bow Wow just asking you to come. Your dumb ass does not have to show up. I just cannot imagine what in the world's going on where you decide it's Bow Wow night at the club and I'm a go. Now, do I think that those of those people were specifically going because it was Bow Wow? No, they was going because it was the club. Right? Like, this just happened to be what the activity was and they decided to show up. But still, I just can't imagine in the midst of this pandemic, seeing them long lines and seeing all those people in there and being like, but we gonna see Bow Wow though. No, that's bad. It's very, very bad. I ain't going to see none of these people. Like, it's 2021, man. People still going to the club to see Fabulous? And see, that's the thing. If you would go in the club in 2021 to see Fabulous, I have to assume you're 40 years old. Now, you can't blame that on young people. Do they even know who Fabulous is? They don't know about them two-tone do-rags. That's all I got.
Yeah, the look on Bomani's face right now says it all.
That's all I got.
All right, this next story comes from tech.
Hi, my name is Nellie Bowles. I'm a reporter for the New York Times. And this past weekend, I had a piece out about everyone leaving San Francisco, all the techies after a decade of making their fortunes in the city heading out. And they are going to beach towns, and they're going to Texas, and they're going to Florida. And they are mad about San Francisco's crime. They're mad about San Francisco's taxes. They're mad about San Francisco's politics that they felt was antagonistic. And I would say the taxes, given how the IPOs went, the taxes have been probably the biggest driver. And then COVID came and it made it all really easy for them to leave. So now an era of the tech boom in San Francisco is coming to an end. And I think there will probably be a couple of years and then a new set of moving vans will show up to my hometown and a new set of kids will come try to make their fortunes.
So San Francisco is interesting to me in this way because, so like New York, for example, New York is crazy expensive, but we fully understand why it is that people like living in New York and people are willing to come and scrape and everything else. But the Bay is so like ridiculously expensive in every single way. And people who love San Francisco, but it's not New York. That's not to say it's better or worse, but it's not New York. Right. Like, I don't feel like it's just a revolving door. People like as soon as some people go out to Bay, all of a sudden there's gonna be more people that want to go in. I don't feel like that's really how it gets down over there. Like, it's a very particular set of people that love it in a very particular way.
Are you looking at me expecting, given that I am a native to the Bay Area, that I'm going to cape for the Bay
Area? No, not even that. I mean, maybe you might. I mean, look, but we know this about San Francisco in particular. The people who love San Francisco love San Francisco. Like, I found it interesting when she said these people were leaving and it's because of the taxes, and she said the politics and all this other stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, so you talk about people who showed up there late and then decided they didn't like it that much and then decided to leave. Okay, got you.
What's interesting, too, you know, she was mentioning kind of giving all these different sorts of reasons for why they're leaving, but then also where they're going to. It's just interesting when you look at the tech landscape now in terms of where all of these companies are based. And these companies are based all over the country now, but there are hubs, you know, like
right.
Austin, Texas. It seems like a lot of kind of the venture capitalists are like, all right, we're going to Austin because there's not as many taxes in Texas, right? Like Elon Musk announced not too long ago that he was leaving Austin, Texas.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I mean, the liberal politics of the Bay Area are kind of incompatible with this ruthless capitalism that is also like running the place. That's why I thought it was interesting. She talked about these people are leaving the Bay, you know, in the politics. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. So we're just talking about these money hungry folks. Gotcha.
All right. This last story comes from business.
Hello, this is Carmen Reinicke for CNBC's Invest in You. In a speech last week, President-elect Joe Biden said that he would call on Congress to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour from where it currently sits at $7.25 an hour. The call to raise the federal minimum wage is part of his larger $1.9 trillion coronavirus aid package called the American Rescue Plan. And it's really aimed at boosting the American economy from the damage of the pandemic and, you know, getting aid to millions of Americans, small businesses that have been impacted. During Biden's speech, you know, he said that nobody working 40 hours a week should be living below the poverty line, which is what happens if you are working 40 hours a week and making $7.25 an hour. He also added that although there's opposition to a $15 minimum wage, he thinks that Congress will be able to pass it. He specifically cited Florida, which in the November presidential election did pass a $15 minimum wage in the state, joining, you know, a group of other states, including California, Connecticut, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York, which have also passed state laws to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour. One thing to note there is that these plans, and likely the plan that Biden will present to Congress, they don't raise the minimum wage overnight, right? So it won't go from $7.25 an hour one day, and then the next day, all of a sudden, it's $15 an hour. Instead, it's a phased rollout. So it would increase, you know, a little bit over a period of time, such as, you know, 5 years. So there would be sort of incremental jumps. And then in 2025 or 2026 is when the country would finally get to a federal minimum wage of $15 across the board.
The minimum wage has been $7.25 for 11 and a half years. Now, you realize how crazy that is? That it has not changed in 11 and a half years? Right? And that's the big, I mean, look, the minimum wage is a tricky thing because, like, I could break out some supply and demand curves, and, you know, it's easy for economists to point out, like, what's wrong with the minimum wage. And people absolutely do skirt the minimum wage. That's a big thing about undocumented immigrants and how they get paid and stuff like that, is the ability to skirt the minimum wage by going in that direction, right? The market plays itself out in that regard. But the anger that so many people have about the idea of somebody getting paid $15 an hour is so wild to me. Just like this, just the animus that people, you know, a person flipping burgers shouldn't be making no $15 an hour. Man, that job sucks. The job absolutely sucks. What are you talking about? That's how they win on this one, is that people just hate the idea of seeing somebody else do better. That's the only explanation.
It's interesting also, too, it kind of came up in this was like, oh, the minimum wage, et cetera, how much that person would make annually versus how much, say, like a teacher makes annually.
Right. I saw that comparison. And I'm like, well, that means teachers should get paid more now, doesn't it? Right. Because this is what I think, like, people start talking about teacher pay. I've always thought that part of why teacher pay is the way that it was is that you didn't have to pay teachers that much before, like back in the day. Right. Because basically you had women who were housewives and women who were teachers. That was kind of what it was. And so if you were a woman who was teaching, presumably you were married and therefore you didn't really need the money. He was the one that was really making the money. You see what I'm saying? And so then it goes from there. And so that becomes a way that you just keep those wages low because you don't feel like those people really need the bread. And then they just carried that all the way out. It was a job that was largely done by women. So you weren't going to give them any money. Why would you do that? You know? And then as you started having people taking the, you know, white folks getting out of the public schools and going to private schools with their kids, they're paying those teachers pretty well. And then leaving the budgets bereft in public schools, you know, for everybody else that comes over there. But yeah, you know, but if we paid them $15 an hour, that would be what teachers get. Then give them more money. Well, wait a minute. Let me think about that. Suckers.
New year, new credit scores. Chime makes it easier to build credit by using your own money to make on-time payments with a secured Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card. Use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted. To apply, just open a Chime checking account with a qualifying direct deposit. There's no annual fee or credit check required when applying. Get started at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Late payment may negatively impact your credit score. Results may vary.
All right, Martin Luther King holiday was on the 18th. That is presumably before the inauguration of Joe Biden. And every year I try to do something here to talk about King and the holiday, just because I think the dilemma of a holiday for King, like my father talked about this, where he said he didn't think they needed to have no holiday. He was just like, we just don't go to work. Now, he said before there was a holiday that black folks would just take the holiday, you know, but I think that there was something noble, you know, important, however you want to put it. There was something to the idea of having this holiday and having King treated as an American hero. The problem was America did not see him as a hero. And to this day, I would say that the majority of Americans, even if they say they thought King was a hero, don't actually believe it. Like, you can look at the world that we got around us. You can't tell me that you actually believe King was a hero and see the way the people out here living right now and say that that's in line with it, right? And so what we wind up with is, and I used to get mad about this all the time, and now I've stopped, where it's just like, oh, yeah, so if the FBI puts out a statement, ICE, you know, everybody puts out a tweet or something, and then everybody comes with their terrible Martin Luther King quotes. Like, I need to see the sites that they go to find these King quotes to make sure that they're as benign as possible and everything else, you know, in the name of King. But this is what the holiday has wrought, right? Because the holiday tells people that this is something that they are supposed to do, but they don't really get why, and they don't really believe in the why. And so then they just come out here and they give this performance of some sort of affection for King, you know, and so, and, you know, we wind up there. I think that if there's something I want to say about King this year, and you know, and I feel like I'm repeating myself after a point, but I believe Martin Luther King is the finest man that this country has ever produced. I think that he is the most important man that this country has ever produced. And as I've said before, if you read any of King's work, he wrote and spoke with a moral clarity that I've never seen from anybody else, any other place. Like, anytime you see these people twist King in his words, you have to know that they're doing it on purpose, because King didn't leave a lot of wiggle room for people to do that. Like, it takes an explicit manipulation to turn his words into something that they were not. There's just really no way around that. But now we're talking about King here the day before this inauguration, where we don't know what the hell's about to happen. Like, we got no idea, man. They are afraid that within the National Guard, they might be people trying to take down the inauguration. Within it, I saw some, I don't know if you saw this, Gabe, where they said, I saw 200 NYPD officers were going down to D.C. to provide security. And I'm like, for who? Like, I can't know anymore. None of us can really know at this point, you know? And so everything that we saw happen on January the 6th and who those people were that we saw there and everything else, something tells me those people don't think that Martin Luther King was a hero. But the politicians that, like, goosed them up absolutely put out their Martin Luther King quotes. They all did, right? This is just kind of the thing that happens after a point. After a point, it stops being about what you actually did and starts becoming about what you represent to other people. And what, if nothing else, became the case is that people in America figured out that we're going to at least just be nice about Martin Luther King. Like, after a while, they felt that way about Ali. It was like, okay, well, we're just going to be nice when we talk about him, right? But they ain't love Ali. Even though there are plenty of us that were entertained by him, but they ain't love Ali. And they ain't love King. And if King was out here right now, they wouldn't want to hear nothing it was that he actually had to say at any point about what was going on here. But there, to me, there has been nothing that has been more of a, hey, this isn't Dr. King's dream, than seeing what happened on the 6th. Like, that was it right there. Dude, I don't know what to make of any of this, to be honest, man. Like, it's starting to weigh a little heavy on me just as I try to figure out what's going to happen for the rest of these days and these people showing up armed at all these different places, at these state houses and everything else. And the government seems to suddenly have realized, oh, wow, we got a fungus among us. And they did not realize the fungus was among us, even though some of us could have told you the fungus was among us, you know, and all of this. And it's interesting that I look at it now. And if you think about this, that after the 6th, like, you can make a reasonable argument that if King was still here and everything that was going on at the 6th, that King would come forth and make a statement that spoke, if nothing else, to the need to bolster and strengthen the Republic. Like, I think that what you would get for King in this time is a defense of America. And these people would not be trying to hear it at all. So this is where we stand. This is where we are. We just had the summer of George Floyd, and it don't seem like nothing really changed. It was a strong month, though. I'll give it that. It was a strong month. And now I think a lot of us are just nervous. Unsure of exactly where any of this is going to go. And this now happening on the week of the King holiday, I think, is interesting in that way. Just because it feels like the folks who hated Martin Luther King the most bear a strong resemblance to the folks that we've seen trying to overthrow the government, which implies that they also don't really have too much love for the America that they said that they love. So what do they love? Because it don't even seem to be each other. So what do they love? What are they in it for? What's the point? And as we're learning, none of those answers are anything good. They're not. And you'll forgive me, I've been a little rambling and off on this. I'm normally pretty sharp and concise on it, but it's like this is as overwhelming a time with it as there's ever been, you know? And so I, again, as I have done many years before, I recommend you just read a little bit by King. Find whatever you can, and you will see how clear it is, because there's no room for equivocating on some things. There's none. And what's going on at these times, there's no room to equivocate on that. And if you ever want to see a man teach you how to do this without equivocating, that is what King is for. That is what King can provide you. And so I encourage you check it out, because I honestly feel like we need to see these words now more than we ever have. Now, I'd also like to highlight that ESPN and The Undefeated are partnering together to expand beyond Black History Month for the Black History Always Initiative. The idea is to not limit the celebration of Black History to February, but to continue it in 2021 through great storytelling that The Undefeated can provide all across ESPN platforms. There's the Music for the Movement series that they've been working on, which has contemporary artists do covers of classic songs, and it'll have a second installment next month. And also want to say that we have a special artist joining us on the right time for that initiative. We'll let you know as that gets closer. Thanks so much for joining us here on the right time. Thanks to CarMax for making a big commitment to the right time. We appreciate that. Gabe Bassett, Christina Buswell, and Tariqa Foster handle everything behind the scenes on this show. Thank you guys. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Rasha Ali of USA Today. Check out her story on these fools going to see Bow Wow at the club in Houston. Thank you to Nellie Bowles of the New York Times. Check out her story on tech companies trying to get out of the Bay Area. And thanks to Carmen Reneke of CNBC. Check out her story on Biden's calls to raise the federal minimum wage to $15. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.